Grade 6 Conference, Lecture 35, The Subjunctive Mood. When we're talking about tense, which we introduce to the children in grade 4, we're speaking about the astral body contemplating the etheric body, the astral body bringing consciousness to the etheric body, because the etheric body is our time body. But when we are predominantly a physical etheric being, as in the first 7, 8, 9 years of life, we are living in time. So time is just a kind of continuum. It's not that easy to grasp in a conscious way the differences between short-term and long-term in the past and what will happen in the future and how that impinges on the present. So we awaken then to tense right after we're learning to tell time, the end of third, the beginning of fourth grade, and then we work strongly with tense in grades 4, 5, and of course again in 6, as we saw, going then into the perfect tenses. Now in grades 6, 7, and 8, the astral body is awakening to itself. It is contemplating itself. And this is where we move from tense to mood. Interesting that mood is a grammatical term as well as a psychological term. And interesting that we're teaching this at a time where we are going to see great mood shifts or swings among many of the children. There will be this moody quality that comes over young people. It will very often have a physiological basis. It will very often be something that they themselves can't explain or understand. You know, why are you in such a bad mood today? By the way, they'll ask you this all the time as well. So you better have some good explanations. One child asks another, why are you in such a bad mood? They'll give a reason, and it will have very little to do with reality. They don't know themselves. So this is really remarkable that we're taking up something in grammar which is actually psychological in nature. It is also very complicated. It's not easy to grasp. And what I suggest is that in grade 6 you introduce it, you sort of air it, see the way the class responds, who gets it, who doesn't, and just bring it in the simplest way. In grade 7, bring it back again, and now it will have a wonderful synergy with the study of wish, wonder, and surprise when you get into creative writing. So, you know, what you're doing this year is, according to Rudolf Steiner, important for the sixth grader, though we always have to remember with Steiner's indications where they're this specific, he's also talking about a group of students in those days who were 9 months, even a year older on the average than the students that we have in classes today. So we're going to tend to lag behind a little bit, American kids in particular, who on the one hand are so accelerated in their growth, on the other hand are so immature, really. And grammar in particular calls for a degree of maturity and wakefulness because it deals with speech, which is such an inherently human part of our being. We could say that the subjunctive mood, along with the indicative and imperative moods, which we'll look at in a cursory way in a moment, the subjunctive mood has a great deal to do with our perception of reality. Now, when we are young, everything is real. You know, this is a real problem with children, weaving tall tales, making up stories. What is real in the palpable, tangible sense, what is real in the imaginative sense, what a child perceives and what they make of it, and so on and so forth. All of this is really one big blob, one big mass. And what we're doing in feeding the imaginative side of the child is partly to keep that alive, because it's such an important faculty for us as human beings. It's partly also to satisfy it so that the child can leave that imaginative quality behind to some extent and also be comfortable in the here and now of the real world with its particular limits and boundaries. Sixth grade, this comes up again, though on a very different level. Boundaries, realities, limits, the envelope, the box, all of this stuff has to be brought before the sixth grader again and again, because the astral body just wants to go all over the place and swinging back and forth from mood to mood and not finding that healthy center. We could say that, to use St. Paul's expression, that a sixth grader is seeing the world through a glass darkly, in the sense that the astral body, which is now so close to them, but not fully penetrated, the astral body stands between the sixth grader and the world. And everything the sixth grader sees with increasing intensity, grade 6, 7, and 8, what they see is through that astral body. And this is why, as I've told you, I tell the parents, double check anything that you're told, even when they seem to be describing something, you know, a quarrel that occurred on the playing ground or something that happened at a party. Don't trust that even the physical details are at all accurate, because their vision gets so blurred and so skewed and so, in Paul's expression, darkened by the astral body that's swirling all around them. So here again, looking at the moods helps us then awaken a sense of what is not, what could be. We could say that the subjunctive speaks very much to wishes, hopes, and dreams, that the subjunctive is a portal into the world of becoming. Very, very important, very wonderful, very beautiful. It's something that really connects us with the future. And for this reason, it is not easy, because the subjunctive speaks of that which is not yet there. It's that for which we are grasping, in a way. Just as there is an essential threefoldness, a triad in tenses, there's also a triad, a threefold quality in the moods as well. There's the indicative mood, there's the imperative mood, and then the subjunctive mood. So the indicative mood, everyone knows, because it's generally the way we speak. Sally entered the room as soon as I began speaking the verse. So entered is past tense. As soon as I began speaking, that's the bringing this into the present. She's standing in the back of the room, hoping that someone will pay attention to her. Indicative mood. I will ask her to sit down and ask her to speak the verse later so that the class can go on. So these various tenses bring us into things that are actually happening. This is going on right before us in the present tense, past and future. The imperative mood has to do with commanding. So this is the imperative kind of sentence that we know well, probably introduced in fourth grade. Sit down, Sally, please. Please is nice to add to the imperative if you can. Please don't distract everyone else from speaking the verse. And please stop fooling around. Everyone's looking at you. So we're using verbs here in a commanding way. Okay, so you can give examples and, you know, write little compositions with all of this, But basically, this is all material that the children already know. But if you're writing about an action that is not happening or is not yet true, but the sentence is a speculation about it, then you're using the subjunctive mood. Now, here's an area in which, first of all, there's a lot of room for correction in the way the children speak, and alas, in the way we speak, because the subjunctive is disappearing from our language, and it's becoming more and more acceptable not to use it at all. And perhaps two phrases that may come up among sixth graders in particular, you know, if I was you, I wouldn't do that. If I was you, I wouldn't say that. If I was you, I'd watch it. No, not was, which is past tense, if I were you. Same with the common expression that one finds. Now you're supposed to drag somebody off to the Department of Social Welfare if they say this, but it's not unusual for a sixth grader to come out and say this. I wish I was dead. I wish I was dead. And the best that you can do is not necessarily to assert the importance of staying alive, but I wish I were dead. Were dead, not was dead. So two common expressions used all the time, which are actually incorrectly said with the verb was, the past tense, but should be were for subjunctive. So let's take this. Sally glared at me when I asked her to sit down, as if I had been talking about the weather. As if I had been talking, had been talking. That is subjunctive. And notice that it's introduced with the phrase, as if. If she had any manners, she would be more considerate of the children in the classroom. If she had any manners, she would be more considerate of the children in the class. If, again, begins that sentence. I wish she were more considerate. I wish she were more considerate. The verb wish then changes the mood of that sentence, and it has to be subjunctive. So, generally, the indicative and imperative moods don't cause too many problems. They're moods that we live with all the time, because they have to do with what happened, with what's happening right now, with what you immediately want to happen in the next moment. There is not this quality of wish, possibility, even longing about them. The subjunctive mood is very challenging, and you need to use special verb forms when you're speculating about actions that aren't happening or aren't true. So possibilities are when you're making hypothetical points. And this has to do, remember, with extrapolation. We spoke about this in astronomy in particular, something that we're teaching the students about, to be able to take what you know in the present and project it into the future with confidence, or what you know in the space around you and be able to project it into other spaces, the equator or the North Pole, with confidence. So hypothetical points that are being made, this requires the subjunctive. And you're projecting then what could have been or what would be. So there are a few contexts that require a subjunctive mood and a few different ways to express it. Perhaps of any of the moods, almost anything in grammar, the subjunctive gives us a degree of freedom and a degree of choice. Certainly there's a difference between right and wrong, but there are usually several right ways to express a subjunctive mood. And here we see again The future can never be completely determined. There's always that possibility of human freedom. And so our grammatical usage correctly mirrors this. So here are a few key words that you can give the students, put them on a kind of alert for the subjunctive. And I would really leave it here. You can give them some exercises. You can try to write a composition in the subjunctive. But it's really planting the subjunctive seed this year and then letting the students make of it what they will. And next year, you'll be able to bring it back in a more creative way in seventh grade. Also, once they've learned perspective drawing, once they've entered a bit into the world of the Renaissance, you'll see that the subjunctive comes much more easily, much more naturally to them. So let's look at clauses beginning with as if or as though. When you have such a clause, you're not necessarily going to be using the subjunctive, but I want to point to circumstances where you will. It's going to be where an action is not true or is not possible. So there's an element of judgment here. It's not automatic the way it is with so many other grammatical usages. You've really got to be making a judgment. Am I going to say this as though it could happen or as though it's absolutely impossible? And notice I'm already using as though in describing to you what a sentence is like when it begins with as though. So let's look at it this way. Sally monopolizes the coat rack as if it were her property. No, it is not her property. It never will be her property. So subjunctive is correct there. As if it were her property. She acts as though she had purchased it with her hard-won allowance. As though she had purchased it. She acts as though she had purchased it. So what are we doing? That in the first example, as if it were her property, as if is followed by a simple past tense to convey that the point about the present is not true. No, this is not her property, but she acts as though it were her property. So we are taking it back a step. Let's look at this again. In the second example, the verb that follows as though is in past perfect tense, which conveys that a point about the past did not happen. She did not buy the coat rack with her allowance. It didn't happen. She acts as though she had purchased it with her hard-won allowance. So we bring it back again. She did not purchase it. It is not purchased. We take it back one tense. So you could see that for a point about the present, you go back to past tense. For a point about the past, you use the past perfect tense when you're doing the subjunctive. So you may ask, well, but in the first example about Sally acting as if the coat rack were her property, shouldn't it be was? Because doesn't was go along with she? No, it should not. When you're talking about an action that isn't presently true or happening, you need a verb that comes from to be. If you need that, you choose were no matter what the subject is. And this is one of the difficulties of subjunctive. You're bringing were into a context that ordinarily would not be there. So as if and as though clauses, when you're working with subjunctive, the verb will remain were. Let's go on to if. If you're using if and you're speculating about a situation that is not possible, here you need to use the subjunctive mood throughout the sentence. In the clause that starts with if, and if there's another clause in the sentence, in that clause as well. So sentences involving if are a special class. They're different from those involving as if or as though. In sentences that contain if, both clauses are speculating about something. When you have sentences beginning as if or containing as if or as though, only one of the clauses is speculative. So here's one. If Charles's mother really cared about the class, she would let us go on that class trip. Okay? If she really cared about the class, notice that I'm saying that she should be caring about the class, but because it's subjunctive, it goes back one step into the past. Present becomes past tense, simple past, cared. She would let us go on the class trip. So here again, if brings both clauses into the subjunctive. You're making all of the verbs past tense to convey a present situation that isn't true and that isn't happening. Some more if examples. If I had known that the class would get addicted to television, I would never have brought that TV into class. If I had known that the class would become addicted to television, I would never have brought that TV into class. Another one. I would not have bought the TV anyway if it hadn't been on sale. I would not have bought the TV anyway if it hadn't been on sale. So notice that the verbs in those sentences are in more complicated forms of the past tense to convey a past situation that wasn't true, that wasn't happening. Now the verbs inside the if clauses all contain had plus the past participle. So the verbs inside independent clauses start with would have and end in a past participle. So we can be speculating about things in the past that did not happen. This way we, in a way, are treating the past a bit like the future, the possibility of what might have happened as well. Now, take a deep breath. As I said, you're only going to introduce this to your class. You don't have to go into this deeply. Next year in our 7th grade online conference, we'll be taking up the subjunctive in much greater depth. And you can see, even just to give you the slightest introduction to it, already this particular segment goes on considerably longer than any of the others dealing with grammar that we've heard so far. So it's something that you're going to introduce. Remember why. It has to do with helping the children with moods. It's helping them make a connection between past, present, and future. It's helping them understand the reality principle. To even in their speech be consciously forming sentences so that they're aware of what is, what may be, what can be, what has happened, what has not happened. You're doing them a very great service by introducing this difficult and always challenging mood. And next year, we'll see what a foundation it can be for genuine creative writing. All right, so this ends our foray into language arts in grade 6.